and ask David to come forward and talk to us about the first 7 days. David.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Yeah, the Bible says God made life on the earth in the course of 7 days. Very unfashionable nowadays. It now children in school are told that's rubbish and that life evolved on the earth over millions of years. But when we look carefully at the story that we've just read together, you can see actually it makes very great sense. So what I want to do first is to run through the story as it is told, as we just heard it read out loud, for a second time and think about it. It tells us in the beginning that the globe was already there when God started work in a state of chaos. It was covered with water and it was dark. And in the process of the 7 days, or 6 days to be precise, it was dried out and then filled with life, different kinds of life, life on the earth itself and life in the air above and life in the water. So that's the process that took place during those 7 days. Now, I've got the text on the screen, so we run through them here. That's what we read in the beginning. So, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and it was without form and void. Now, I think we can probably suggest there that that first verse, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, is actually a title, a headline, like you have in a newspaper. When you pick up the news this morning and you read about 11 people being killed in the synagogue in America, that's the headline, and the details follow lower down. In fact, in a very real sense, this may be, because in those days we didn't have paper, everything was written down on tablets, made of clay and inscribed with a pen, this may well be the top point on the tablet, so that when you have them on the floor in a great heap, you know which is tablet number one, which is tablet number two, which is tablet number three. This is the headline for that tablet. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. So that's probably the way we have to look at it. And so the very first action of God's creation was to bring light on the earth, because without light, life itself would be impossible. Plants need light to through photosynthesis to produce sugars for their own growth, for energy, and then we animals depend on plants for our energy. We eat potatoes or corn and things like that to give us energy to work. So light is a very logical beginning for this process that God had in mind in Genesis. And then it says that was the first day. There was evening and there was morning. There was light day, and there was darkness, and there was light. I think that probably hints that the light was coming from the sun, because that's how we get our 12 hours of light, 12 hours of darkness. The sun, and the earth revolves, and the sun stays still, and so day follows night. And so I think we can see that already the globe was actually rotating. It's gone way out of that sequence. I don't know what happened there. Shut your eyes for a minute. It's gone to slide 57, isn't it? Which is crazy. Oh dear. Yeah, let me get back to where we were. Let's do escape and start again. Right. There we go. Right. Oh, still not, is it? How do we get to... what we want is slideshow. Play from beginning. Clunk. Yes, all right, let's move on. So that's the globe in chaos. That's the fact that probably the sun was already going around in circles, well, the earth was going around in circles, and day was following night. I think that's where we got to. So next stage is to create dry land, because you can't have any plants without some soil to grow them in. So huge volumes of water had to be moved up off the surface of the earth, and it seems, by investigation we can find out, also a lot of water went downwards into the earth. The scientists tell us that there is more water in the earth than there is on it. It might sound surprising, but it seems to be a scientific fact. So the water has to be got rid of, and that huge energy that was required to vaporize the water and to drain it down underneath was carried out by the Spirit of God. It said the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the waters. We learn in the Bible that the Spirit of God is his energy, the power by which he does things. So he separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the clouds, probably more clouds in those days. And then stage three is to create plants on the earth, because everything has to depend on plants. All the higher stages of creation depend on plants. So he gathers the seeds together, and on the earth he creates plant. There's a beautiful picture there of a jungle scene. Can we just pull those curtains possibly? It's a bit, still a bit bright on the screen, isn't it? Since the sun's coming up, it's definitely day rather than night out there. And this particular morning it's an hour later than usual. That's better, isn't it? Yeah, you can see the picture better. Thank you. So that was on the third day. Vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit according to its kind. And that was day three. Day four revealed the sun, moon, and stars. Presumably up to this point, we can argue this, that there was a mist over the earth as the waters were gradually moving upwards and outwards. Now that the air is so clear, so transparent, you can actually see the sun, moon, and stars, which were already there because day and night was following. The sun was already there. And so God said, now let there be light in the heavens to be for signs and seasons and days and years. And from that point onwards, we have the sun for day and night time, moon, fraction of the month. In the old days, before you had watches, told you what time of the month it was, you made your appointments by the moon, and then the stars give you our signs for travellers. Use the stars then to navigate with. So we read there then that the sun and the moon were both to give light. Interesting that, because in the days before street lighting, the moon was quite important at night time for travel, and the heavenly bodies for navigation, the signs, and for dividing up the time. So that's it. And then next stage five is to create the water creatures, the sea creatures, and the birds. Actually, the waters down below and the air above first are populated with living creatures. There's the fishes in the sea, and there's the birds on the earth. And God said that waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and the birds fly across above the earth, across the heavens. And that was the fifth day of the process. Day six was to create animals, insects, and eventually, as we read, man himself, or herself as well. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creeping things, beasts of the earth. And then verse 26, let us make man, says God, in our image. Now, I think you'll agree with me that there was an entirely logical sequence of events. This great pyramid of life, of which we are part, is supported at the bottom by plants. They have to fix the carbon from the atmosphere and turn it into sugars that we can all use by photosynthesis. And those plants absorb the carbon dioxide and emit oxygen, which is essential for the life of animals. And many plants and trees and birds need insects for pollination and seed dispersal. So it's important that the birds and the insects are there for the plants to be able to get going. They have to be next on the list, so to speak. And day seven, the end of the process, was a day of relaxation. On the seventh day, God finished his work and rested on the seventh day. Not that he was tired, because the Hebrew word there for rest doesn't necessarily mean because you're worn out. It just means to abstain from work. Like we would ourselves, we finish some great project that we've been working on for weeks, let's say knitting a hat or making a patio in the garden. But once we finish it, on the day we finish it, we sit down and go, that's great. We enjoy it, don't we? We enjoy the work that we've done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Notice it's not called Sabbath yet, because that's coming later in the Bible. So that's the creation story in Genesis chapter 1, and it's there all through the rest of the Bible as well. We can't escape that fact. It's central to the Bible story. Here's Moses, Exodus chapter 20, in 6 days. Oops, sorry, 6 days. God, come back here. 6 days God made the heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. That's a statement from Moses thousands of years after the creation. Here's Jesus himself. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. That's Jesus' own words. Apostle Paul. Adam was first formed, then Eve. Adam was not deceived, the woman was deceived. That's the story of the chapter 3 of Genesis. So those early chapters of Genesis are essential to the whole message of the Bible. We can't detach those and say, oh, that's just legend, that's myth, because they're there as part of the whole Bible story. And you might say, well, what about evolution? Surely scientists have proved that life evolved on the earth. This is just a child's explanation for what happened, but in actual fact, it all evolved from the very small beginnings. Well, I think we've got a few minutes left to show that the complexity of life on the earth demands a creator, somebody very intelligent up there who thought it all through and put it together. I want to take just one single example this morning, because obviously limitations of time, and that's a very simple thing which we've all got two of, the human ear. Now the human ear is a fantastic instrument, as I hope I can show you in the next few minutes. It's a very essential link in communication with the world around us. With people without hearing are greatly hampered in life. So, without the ear, we wouldn't hear the lion roar, and we wouldn't be able to run away to escape from him. If we didn't have ears, when mum calls us home for dinner, we wouldn't go for dinner. We have to have ears. They're very important to us. How does the ear work? How does it tell us what is happening out there? Well, again, scientists tell us that sound is actually carried by the air itself from one point to another. And when we talk, or bang a drum or something like that, we actually make the air itself vibrate. And those vibrations travel through space and they're picked up by our ears. And inside our ears is a little diaphragm like a drum, which has a kind of skin on top, literally like the top of a drum, which then vibrates in as the incoming waves make it do so. Here's a picture. This is the outer ear, where you see the first diaphragm, it's labelled there, which is why you don't poke too heavy things down inside your ear, which you might damage it. Here's somebody banging a drum over here on the left, okay? Bang the drum, and the sound waves, the vibrations, travel across, and they're picked up by the diaphragm inside that ear, which also vibrates in tune with the sound that's coming in, the vibrations that are coming in. Now that movement inside the ear itself is then amplified by two very tiny bones. And that increased movement is passed on to another membrane deep inside the ear, which then is connected with the sound and it takes it through to the brain. So this is an amplifier, but it works by electricity. It has a very complicated box over there somewhere, which makes the sound from my mouth much louder for you to hear, right? So we have inside our head a mechanical amplifier. It takes the small movements of that outer diaphragm and makes it into a bigger one, so that we can get hear more intently. With no electricity, very compact, you can't even see it. It's inside your head. So these are the inside ear bones. There, let's label those for you. There you are. Yeah, can you see that? Yeah, there you are. Three little bones in a sequence, suspended from the top there, where the bones are. And this first one is shaped so that as it moves, like a lever, it makes a bigger movement on the second bone, which then transmits that through to the inner ear. So there's a... Oh, come on, Tom, look up. There we go. Yeah, that's perhaps a little bit clear, is it? Yeah. Those are the three bones. The outer diaphragm, the first bone, which moves like a lever, the second bone, which takes this movement, bigger movement, down to a stirrup-shaped bone there, which contacts the inner ear. And see, the small movement there becomes a big movement there. That's the amplification system. Small movement becomes a big movement. Fantastic. So, once we get to that second diaphragm, the one right inside your head, there's a special fluid on the inside of this diaphragm that transmits the vibration to a series of very tiny hairs suspended on a diaphragm or membrane. And this fluid is unique, it's not found anywhere else in the body. It's quite a sticky thing, and it's perfectly suited to transmitting this vibration, this wave motion from the diaphragm through to the hairs. The hairs themselves are graded in length from long ones down to short ones, a bit like a ladder, but a ladder where the rungs get shorter as you go up the ladder, the old-fashioned ladder, like picking fruit from trees, okay? Some of you remember those, yeah? And this tube which contains these hairs, it's twisted round like a snail shell. It's called the cochlea. Much more convenient than having a long tube sticking out on the other side of your head to have it coiled up inside your head. So that's the way it works. And there's a picture of the cochlea, this tube wound round like a snail's shell. And you can see in the picture there too, the nerves coming off from those little hairs, which are going to take the sound through to the brain. And that's the tube, remember, filled with a special sticky fluid that conducts the movement. Now, in this next picture, you can see there's a special tube there that goes down into your throat, which is very important because it balances out the pressure in the outer atmosphere there with the pressure inside our ear. If you climb a mountain, the air pressure gets less. And if it were not for this tube here, what would happen would be your diaphragm would swell outwards until it made such stiff it would move. And conversely, if you go down a coal mine and work a very deep coal mine, the pressure would be so high that the diaphragm would go that way, and it would be so taut you wouldn't be able to hear anything at all. But with this tube here, it allows you, by swallowing, to allow the air to get through both sides of that membrane, and it can then vibrate as normal. You know all about this if you've flown an aeroplane, I'm sure most of you probably have. So each of those little hairs in that long tube, each individual hair is tuned to pick up a particular vibration or frequency. And so each of those hairs then has a little nerve at the base of it, so when it moves, the nerve takes a signal up through to the brain, the auditory department in the brain. So, again, the diagram here, here's that bone, there's the amplifying, that's the second diaphragm, the inner one, and there's the tube with the cochlea, there's the pairs, it decreasing in length from long ones at the beginning, short ones at the end there. And each of those hairs individually, each individual hair is wired back into the brain. So there's millions of connections to the auditory department in your brain. And if I can show this diagram here, it's like this is a ladder idea with the rungs getting shorter or getting shorter from the beginning to the end. And there's the nerves going off to the brain. Okay? So each of those nerves, as we said, is tuned to a particular frequency. So there'll be one particular nerve, for middle C, on the piano, 256 vibrations per second, 256. That's the one for that particular hair. And it will only vibrate if 256 comes in, middle C, on the piano. Next one, too, will be a different frequency. One on the other side, a different frequency again. So a deep sound and a high-pitched sound make different hairs vibrate. A high-pitched whistle will make the short hairs vibrate, and a cello playing deep notes will make the long hairs vibrate. Okay? And there are over 30,000 of these hairs in the ear, and the brain, from two ears, the brain assembles all these signals, and because you've got two ears, you can actually work out not only the pitch of the sound coming in, but the direction from which it was coming, because the sound coming, say, from the right will hit this ear slightly earlier than it will hit the second ear. It takes time to go around here. And the brain can work that out. It can say, oh, quicker that side must be coming from the right. Quicker that side must be coming from the left. Or equal impulse must be coming from straight ahead. So all that's there inside your head, and it's been working there since you were a baby. You probably never knew anything about it, unless you studied this in biology or something, or in medicine. But it's been working for you all your life up to now. Now, it's very difficult, I think, if we say to ourselves, how did this evolve? How could those three tiny bones inside the middle part of your ear come together to bridge the gap between the two diaphragms and at the same time amplify the sound? Because as we saw, the shape of them is very particular. The first one, which has a long arm going down, suspended from the top here, has to bear on the second bone at this point here, so that a small movement here becomes a more powerful movement up there. And that has to merge carefully into the third bone, which takes the signal through to the ear. So three bones coming together in the right order, suspended from the top of the head, in chamber inside your head. How could that happen? By chance, by random mutations. And again, I think it's even harder, even harder to imagine those 30,000 hairs assembling themselves in the correct order, small, getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. That's actually bigger, getting smaller and smaller and smaller, yeah, as you go through the tube, and a unique fluid, and the whole thing neatly turned around in a coil, so it doesn't take up much space in your head, just by chance. Just by mutations, which can't be there, says it up, so science, except by chance. I think that's a fantastic thing, really. And there's lots more things we could talk about, but we haven't got time, okay? Now, I think the ear is such an amazing device. It demands somebody who's a fantastic designer, who thought that all through and worked out what was needed and put it all together on day one. And that's exactly what the Bible says, actually. It's the psalmist David. He who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? Psalm 94. Verse 9. Here's another one. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. The Lord has made them both. Proverbs chapter 20. So I'm going to say then that Michelangelo's famous picture, that God created man, or women, as we all are, in this room on the sixth day, just like it said. Now you could say, well, how could God possibly create life, all that, in just 7 days? It's impossible. Well, is it impossible? The Bible says that God has all power. He's not bounded by time like we are. Time's not important to him. Here's what Jesus himself said. Jesus looked at them, his disciples, and said, with man it's impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God. There's no limit to what he can do. And Peter, with the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years. 1,000 years is one day. It's not confined by time like we are. He can work it all out and then bring it to pass. And the time's not important to him. Secondly, that pyramid of life we talked about is very delicately balanced. It has to be put together in such a way that the creatures are there together on day one. Because the plants have to be the first in place, because they're the ones who are going to turn the energy from the sun into a form that herbivores can eat. And then carnivores like us, or omnivores like us, can then eat the herbivores. And the energy which those plants picked up from the sun comes through to us, and there we are right at the top of the pyramid of life, in a very destructive position, unfortunately. We're supposed to take care of the whole pyramid, but at the moment it seems to be falling to pieces under our insane exploitation of those resources. And remember, at the end of each life, each of those little lives there, the creatures, the plants, the birds, the fishes, they all die, they fall down to the bottom, they decay, and the nutrients from their corpses goes into the soil, at the bottom of the sea, whatever it is, and then feeds the plants and begins the cycle of life again. So a beautiful, balanced system, which all has to be there at the same time. You can't have the plants waiting around 1 million years for the insects to come along and fertilise them. They've got to be there all together at the same time to make it work. Yeah, so a contemporary existence. So where are we next? A fundamental Christian doctrine is the resurrection of the dead. Now, if you say to me, how could God possibly make life on the earth in 6 days? Well, a fundamental Christian doctrine, whether you're Christadelphians, Catholics, or Church of England, whatever, is there's going to be, one day, a resurrection of the dead. Now, on the resurrection of the dead, and that's what Jesus himself says, all who are in the tombs will hear Jesus' voice and come out. If God, on one day, can recreate from the dust of the earth, or the water of the sea, where people are drowned, died, and bring them back to life, all those people, complete with their brains, if that's possible for him, why do you think it's difficult for him to create a life in the beginning? And if you don't believe in the resurrection of the dead, then you're not a Christian. It's a fundamental Christian doctrine. So all things are possible with God. That's what Jesus said. And we needn't have any problems with that, really, when we think about it like that. Okay, you say, what about the fossils then, David? How about fossils? Where do the fossils come from? Well, we're not told what happened to the earth before Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. The globe was obviously there in a state of chaos. We're not told what happened before those 7 days of Adam's world. And there are many fossils of animals, plants, and invertebrates indeed, that just no longer exist on the earth. Some in huge numbers. Those of you who've worked in coal mines near Coventry will know that there's enormous layers of fossilised plants and trees. And on the White Cliffs of Dover, enormous, vast quantities of little tiny shells of creatures that were once little fossils, little calcium-coated creatures that have built up in huge layers there. Obviously, they're a very long time. Here's the coal measures, the plants' residues. Here's some of the fossils that are found so frequently in and amongst those layers. Now, that perhaps hints there could have been an earlier creation, perhaps preparing for the present one, so that the coal was there and the oil is there for the use of mankind in the one Adam's creation. But we're not told about that in the Bible, because the Bible's only concerned with the world from Adam onwards. And what happened before that time is not interesting to us, really. It's not to do with our salvation. So we're coming to the end now. We need now to look at a message from the Creator, that great God, that huge, fantastic design brain out there that made us all. Here's what he says to us. And see what the Apostle Paul says in his famous speech in Athens at Mars Hill. And here's the words, just a little extract from it. He says, the God who made, and he's speaking here to the philosophers, the Dawkins of that age, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, isn't served with temples. He doesn't need temples, he says. He doesn't need anything. He himself gives to mankind life and breath and everything. He doesn't need a house to live in, like a temple made of stone in Athens. And this is how he goes on. God made from one man, that's Adam, isn't it? Every nation of mankind, we all descended from that one man, to live on the face of the earth. He's determined how long they stop there, nations, the boundaries of their dwelling place, how far they can expand before he says stop. Napoleon, so far with the expansion, to retreat back to France. But here's the object of it all, he said. This is why he did everything, that they should seek God. So he makes these men, these nations of the earth, and he puts them in their place, decides where they're going to live, how long they're going to stop there. But it's also that they should seek God and feel their way towards him and find him. So this great creator God out there is not just a dispassionate designer, a creator, a maker of things. He's a God who wants us to find him, to search him, and to have faith in him. And he's not just a scientist who's had a fantastic brain. He's a God of love, a God who wants a relationship with those people down there that he created. He wants us to love him, just as he loves us. And although he is the great all-creating God, he can't make us love him. Because love is a voluntary thing. You can't make anybody love you. However much money you give them, they won't love you more because you give them money. Love is something which comes from inside us. It's a voluntary thing. And he wants us to search out for him and find him. And that's why we have to read the Bible. Because this book is his book. It's his message to us all about who he is, what his big plan is for the earth, and how we can find the key to happiness, both in this life, and if we serve him well, eternal life in his glorious kingdom. So, that's my lesson really for today. Read the Bible. Because only in this book can we find out about God and what he wants us to do. Okay? So, that's the message. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's what will happen. And we can be part of that kingdom if we listen to God. Thank you.
On your behalf, I'd like to thank David in the relatively short time that we always have on a Sunday morning for taking us through those thoughts. Hopefully it's given us plenty to think about, particularly when we think about the utter complexities of the ear, how that actually came into existence, either by someone who designed it, like people design all sorts of complicated things electronically, or whether it just happened to come about through sort of process of time, as it were. I'll leave that for you to think about. Next Sunday our speaker is Nigel Patterson from Newquay, and his subject will be at 10 o'clock in the morning, The Man Who Will Rule the World. We're going to break now for a short while. If we're back in our seats at 10 past 11 for the breaking of bread, I'll ask you now please to stand.